talking that Richard and I did last night was just directed right at the walls. I hope I picked up some of it to remember it, because I hate to have him go through the whole damn thing all over again.
Also, the idea of the cross, I think it was because we had planned on celebrating the termination of the fast at the 40 acres. This was, these were our plans. Right, we were going to have services right where the cross was, or right to the right next, right in the in front of the cross. And we expected a lot of people for that day. Like, as you know, we had about 10,000, close to 10,000 at the park. The weather had been very favorable in that time, but the Friday before the Sunday that the fest was terminated on, it come a big rain, and the, you know, that ground over there, it gets with its alkali and it gets pretty messy. So we had to move it elsewhere, because we couldn't get there. It would be too muddy, and we were hoping that it would dry up by Sunday, but it didn't. And so we had, at the last minute, we had to ask permission to use the memorial park to hold the services. That's why we had him at the memorial park. That's when Kennedy was here. The when they broke bread together at the end of the fest. Now, so that cross stood there for quite a while before they chopped it down. During when the senator was assassinated in Los Angeles, we covered that the cross was a dirty white. We just whitewashed it, and it looked very like the old missions. You know how they look very solemn when they, like this, an old cross. So during the time of mourning, we wrapped it in crepe. Black crepe paper. It's luto. How do you say luto?
Mourning.
Mourning. No. And then we covered, and it looked it symbolized something for people that believe in these things. You know, it really meant something. It looked very sad, and the way it's supposed to be, and it gives you that feeling of mourning. Anyway, I guess this must have disturbed some people very much, because it had been there about a week at the most, and the paper started to come off. It looked raggedy, and it even looked more sorrowful. And somebody just decided they were going to do away with it, and they went up there and set fire to it one night. They threw a tire around it and threw some gas or something at it. Anyway, they set fire to it, and it started burning. At that time, we had to, this must have been during the early hours of the morning or very late at night. The guards happened to see that fire, and they made it out that it was somewhere in our property, so they ran up there, and they were lucky enough to it hadn't done that much damage, because of, you know, so they were able to put it out, and it did some damage to the cross, but not enough to bring it down. You know, it could still stand. It was scorched very badly, but it was still there. So about 2 days later, they came back, but this time they didn't come back with matches. They came back with a buzzsaw, and they put the buzzsaw to it and really fell it. And that's where it is right now. It's still lying there. Just where it fell, it's lying there. I mentioned that we always had guards there because of, you know, the always a possibility of somebody trying to bring harm upon him. And this day, it was early in the morning. It was the Sunday, and Jim Drake and Dolores and Leroy, I believe, were supposed to go pick up the senator at the airport, and they went pick him up, and he was supposed to arrive at a certain time, and they asked him to stay there with Caesar until he come back. And it was, looks like everybody was gone except me and him. We were there all by ourselves at that time. And And we were talking, I was on the season, and I was watching the, because everything had to be timed right, you know. I think this is for security measures also, for the senator, I guess, that everything has to be timed, I understand. And they were late about 15 or 20 minutes. And when I got there, I was peeking through the window, and I recognized Jim's car and the doctor's car, and I was waiting for him. They drove around the service station in the back, on the corridor where I told you the screen door was. You've probably seen the screen door was still there. Everything else was locked. Front door was locked, everything. That was the only place you would come in, and that also was locked because I was there by myself. And when I got there, he got off right away, and they introduced him to me, shook his hand. And then he said, the first thing he says, "How is he doing?" I said, "Fine. Why don't you come in?" I opened the door, we went in, and they talked for a little. He didn't sit down, he just stood there and talked. And must have talked for about, not more than 10 minutes, I would say. Very, very short. He said that the senator told him that he didn't want to stay there too long because he would see him a little later and he had to make the preparations. So they were waiting for somebody, I don't know, somebody else, another car that was going to come and escort him to the... No, I'll take it back. They were going to Jim Drake's house and wait until everything was set over there and they would come. He asked to use the restroom. And we had the brand new restrooms were already in operation and nobody had a key. You know, they were there, but they were locked. The ones with the key, Mike was in charge of the keys or something. Anyway, he couldn't use the restroom because they were locked. And then, by this time we were outside already. He was walking around, you know, just looking around and asking a lot of questions to Jim and Dolores and, you know, just a lot of questions. He was asking about a lot of things. And we were all out there, and then he asked if he could have a glass of water. And there was no water either. And that was very bad, you know. So somebody, I think the doctor sent somebody. By that time, there was another car that already go to town to get some Cokes or something cold to drink. Well, by the time he got back, they weren't there no more. They had left. But these are things that I'll never forget. It was very embarrassing and very bad planning. Oh, yes, yes. He didn't, it didn't bother him, really, but it bothered us very much because, you know, but he understood that we were all... running around like headless chickens for that day, and he was the kind of person that understood all these little things about people. He understood people, so therefore he understood us that day.
This will be about how I first met Richard and Caesar.
Yes, you were asking me if I remembered, if I was there, you asked if I was present at that meeting?
Yeah.
I sure was. I wouldn't have missed it for nothing. We were all very curious to see what it was all about. I remember that before that meeting, it was during the week, I remember, a weekday. So a couple of days before, I'm sure it was, this health nurse that was there in San Jose by the name of Alicia was the one that got in contact with us. And she told us that there was a man, that would be working in the community with the Mexican American people, and that he would like to have a meeting with us. He must have mentioned the name, but I can't say that I remembered the name then. Well, she said that if it was all right to have that meeting there, and that we could have some more people there that we knew to be present there, that it was very important. He wanted to talk to us some. About something would be of much interest to us. So we had about a couple of days before the meeting. You know, we were working together at that time. We were pruning. I remember very well we were pruning trees.
Was he working part-time at the lumberyard at that time, part-time pruning?
He wasn't working at the lumberyard then. He was working, we were pruning trees. He got the lumberyard job after that.
I see.
Yes. We were pruning. And like... apricots. We were pruning apricots. And we were the only ones working at this particular ranch. We were the only pruners. It was a small ranch, really. And when you're pruning, you work two to a tree, so you have you're working on one side and one on the other, and so you have a lot of time. You talk all day long because you're face-to-face, and it's easy to carry a conversation all day long, talk about one thing or the other. So I remember that we were discussing, what was this all about, you know? And he says, he says that it's of interest to us. He has something up his sleeve, you know. No, nobody would come up here trying to help the Chicano, you know, and just like that, you know. He wants something from us. He's going to exploit us or something, you know. We were sure that it was going to happen, you know. He's trying to sell us something, an insurance, or we thought of a million different things, you know. And, I remember the day came around, we were there at the time, and I, for one, and I know Caesar more so, I guess, he was very turned on after you start explaining us what about CSO, the beginning of CSO. I can remember very clearly what you talk about that night, because I was paying very close attention. He talked about the Los Angeles CSO and the how they had, about Roy Baal, you mentioned the name of Roy Baal, how they had elected the first consul, I believe it was. And I think about the police brutalities and all these things, Bloody Christmas, and you were talking right down our alley then, you know, because we had, for some reason, it's funny, but for some reason, a lot of our conversation was about this, you know. We knew that the Mexican American was dormant; it was doing nothing. But then we had that feeling then that you had to be educated, you had to have a college degree and all that in order to be able to do something. We wanted to do something, but we were certain that we couldn't do it because we were, well, you could almost say an alphabet, you know, and we didn't have a know-how. We didn't know how to who to go to and all this. We wanted things changed, but we were sure that we couldn't do it, you know, at that time. Caesar felt this way too, I'm sure. We felt that there was a lot of injustices that had been done to us personally, you know. Police brutality, discrimination, job discrimination. That's why we were pruning, because we couldn't do anything else. And at that time, I think we must have had applications all over the plants in San Jose, and we never did get called, you know. All these things kept adding up, and we figured that we were just going to be that way all our lives, that we would never change. So when you started talking about this, we really, really got turned on from there, and we started, well, you know what happened after that, you know. Then we got really, real involved, very involved, and the day was too long before we came home so we could go out and talk to people and register voters. Remember how many were registered in Santa Clara and San Jose County? It was just, I think we did very great. And from there on, well, that's, you know the rest. We really made a change in our lives, I think. It was at our parents' house, a very small,
Sharp.
Yes, right, 53 Sharp, that little green, it's not there no more, Venus. And there must have been, just the family alone, we must have been around 15 there. And then there were some neighbors, the next door neighbors, and somebody from down the street. And it was a very good meeting, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And from there on, it was, I think you hit the jackpot that night.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Caesar.
Yeah. It seemed to me that, as I remember it, I had to go from there to another meeting over on the other side of town with somebody by the name of Flores. And I think that Caesar went with me to that meeting.
I
think he left out, I'm not sure.
I don't remember this, but I know that he was very turned on. From there on, we talked of nothing else but this. That was a complete change in our lives.
You weren't particularly suspicious after that meeting?
No, not after the meeting. No, not after the meeting. After you explained it, and then no, we were very suspicious before the meeting. You know,
yeah.
We were sure that you were there to take advantage of us in one way or the other. We were just positive that it's because a gavacho coming to us for help. And there would have been a Mexican at that time, we thought, see? It would have been a Mexican trying to come and help. Mexicans, we could have understood a little bit. A gringo, we just didn't make sense then. And now that Chicano would come trying to give me help, I would be very, very cautious.